the reality is that we will never close the gap between the need and the availability of mental health support using one-to-one interactions, even if we use tech to link them up. So how can we create super impactful experiences and tools that help to change people's mindsets and happiness at scale? And that's what we're doing at Your Haven.
Hello, and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram, and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. I shared last week that we want to become the leading podcast globally for women in tech, or essentially any woman who's fascinated by emerging tech like we are, and it feels like this is exactly the right path for us. There's such a strong need for more women architecting what comes next on the internet, and so I feel really glad as founder of Women of Web3 that we're making this probably small but quite mighty change by educating women and helping them even get jobs in this space too. But speaking of change making, today's guest is going to blow you away. I hope you've woken up properly because this is some serious chat about changing the world and women's place within it, so buckle up. I say that, but actually Claire Barnett is also very lovely as well as terrifyingly intelligent. I'm serious. She's the co-founder and CEO of a VR for good platform called Your Haven, where they're marrying up VR and XR headsets with AI-generated therapy sessions based on the voices and work of real therapists. Pretty cool. So a really juicy topic to get into, and we're going to hear about her incredible career leading up to that, including being executive director of UN Women UK, which I've also just become a delegate of. So without further ado, here's Claire. Welcome to the show, Claire.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We've sort of switched things around and we're starting our episodes with the most useful thing first. So what would you say is the most helpful strategy or tip that's got you where you are today?
Well, I can't guarantee that this is going to be the most useful thing of the podcast or indeed any podcast, but I do really like a framework. And so I think, you know, I have a whole number of those that I use, and I think I'm sure they're influenced more than I would like to think by UN theories of change, McKinsey issue trees, etc. But I think the kind of one that I would recommend to people if you're starting with just trying to think about your journey in a more structured way is, where are you now? This can sound really obvious. Where are you now? And what outcome do you want to achieve? Or what kind of journey do you want to have on that path? And I think, you know, people tend to fall into one of those two categories. Like, either you're somebody who's like, this is the way that I want to live, and whatever comes out of that comes out of it. Or you're somebody who says, this is where I'm going. And I think if you're a this is where I'm going person, I was going to say there are lots of ways to skin a cat, but in this eco era, we probably shouldn't say that anymore. I was then going to say many ways to peel a banana, and I'm like, actually, there kind of aren't. So that's a terrible example. But there are lots of ways to get there on the journey. And I think it's really important, whether you're starting a business or thinking about your own personal journey, to start with, what have I got that is going to help me get there? And I think so many people don't do that. They look at competitors, maybe in the startup world, and think, well, they're working in, for example, luxury. So I want to work in luxury because there must be a market there. And it's like, well, they came from jobs in luxury and media. So that was just what they had, right? Maybe you actually have a medicine degree and then you should be selling in healthcare, or you are really good at getting articles, or even like you did this launch party that was legendary and everyone came to it, and then some journalists came along and you got some articles off it. Like, make it community building and parties. So I think it's like my kind of biggest framework is, what have you got now? What are you trying to achieve? Rather than necessarily specifics in terms of what does that look like, what's the underlying change, and what is your best route of getting there?
I really like that. Thank you. So the kind of, where are you now and where do you want to be and what journey do you want to have?
I think it's usually one of, where do you want to get to, or what kind of journey do you want to have? I think it's also okay. Some people are kind of like, look, I don't really goal set, but I know the way that I want to live my life, and whatever comes out, it comes out. And I think that's fine too.
I really like that. And also reminds me that there is actually value in community building, because it's something I was always almost reluctant to put on my CV because of building Women of Web3, and previously I ran something called Powersuit Social, which is all about the future of the creative industries. So I think I've always basically been future obsessed. But community building is one of those things where it is actually quite a unique thing. It doesn't sort of feel like it fits in a traditional CV, so I've always been a bit reluctant to shout about it, but it is particularly valuable in this kind of Web3 emerging tech kind of context. So I really want to hear about your career, because I've only heard a really short amount about it when I met you the other day. So you've gone from tour guiding and spending time in South America to then consulting at McKinsey on gender inclusion, and you later became executive director for UN Women UK, which I'm now also a delegate for. And then alongside this, you've also been running your own sort of wellness studio in London, and now you're in a spatial computing startup as CEO and co-founder. So yeah, tell me more about your journey. What has kind of been your guiding framework, or like why you've made these decisions?
Yeah, I would love to. And by the way, I think community building is so important. And ultimately, when everybody gets really good at what they do, everyone does community building, right? Like that's the heart of networking and of kind of becoming a thought leader. So I think what you're doing is really important. In terms of my journey, I did my master's degree was in historical anthropology and looked at the history of gender and sexuality, focusing on medieval spiritual people.
Wow.
So I'm very interested in a lot of the stuff that goes along with that still, like ritual and religious practice, and also, you know, sexuality and how people kind of make up stories of deviancy in that space to throw shade at people who are, you know, rocking the social mesh a bit too much. But I guess, you know, what definitely was a guiding light there was an interest in gender inequality and in marginalization and how that happens. So yeah, the stuff with kind of Brazilian microfinance was about providing microloans to women and supporting them to lift themselves out of, you know, some at times pretty unfair situations they found themselves in. And, you know, tour guiding was about kind of storytelling about history and religion and culture and how people came to be where they are. And I was lucky enough to find myself at McKinsey by total chance, because I put my hand up to be the first woman student president at my college, you know, just really wanted to kind of get into super exciting discussions about rent. And it turns out that that's a group that management consultancies, which I previously had no idea what they were, go and meet specifically. And they did a free dinner. I think it was actually BCG that did a free dinner where they gave you books. And I was like, free books? I'm going to go to that. So yeah, I kind of stumbled my way into management consulting in a slightly strange way that I'm not sure I'd recommend. I applied only to McKinsey and I didn't get in. I got to a first interview, didn't get past that stage. And I heard someone talking about a book about how to pass those interviews. So I bought the book and studied for a year. And then a year later, only applied to one company again, which was McKinsey. And I'm just really lucky that I got in that time, because I remember studying from an AS business studies textbook from the library. So slightly random journey, but the kind of guiding light there was, you know, I got myself onto every emerging study, which is what we call projects there, about gender equality, diversity, sustainability that there was, and kind of carved out a bit of a name for myself in that space. And then UN Women were really looking for some support for the operating model and the journey of their UK office. And I went there for a short secondment that turned into running the office for 7 years, as these things do. It's the sort of work that absolutely draws you in. And I think that was kind of where I discovered that my thing is not individualistic, but is structural change. So how do you change, yes, individual behaviors in ways that shift whole social structures, but it's like getting to the heart of those tricky problems that we often think, well, that's just something we've got to accept. You know, we complain about them, but we think, well, it's probably too difficult to make an impact on. And one of those for me at UN Women was sexual harassment and assault. You know, something that has coloured my experience of walking through the world deeply, and, you know, even more so for people with multiple other marginalised intersecting identities, and was something that I felt was being not taken seriously, but that UN Women absolutely had the tools within the global system to solve in a really meaningful way. And so, you know, in 2017, kind of sat at my desk in the rain in our tiny shared workspace, looking out the window, thinking, I think we're going to make ending sexual harassment our next goal in the UK. And I was even at that point being interviewed on quite reputable news outlets where people were saying, well, aren't you making a bit of a fuss about nothing? And then, you know, fast forward a few years, we did a massive viral campaign, as it turned out, which led people to take to the streets protesting against sexual harassment, and got, you know, 500 news articles across Europe in the first 3 days since we launched the data, and really took off. And so that led to incredible partnerships with the likes of Bumble, Sony Music, and a bunch of music festivals across the UK, Addison Lee and Comcab. So we trained black cab drivers, which was fascinating and amazing to work with that community. Mayor of London, Manchester, TfL, you know, Kearney, EY, all sorts of incredible partnerships there. And so, you know, loved doing that. And I was given an Innovate UK Women in Innovation Award for a virtual and mixed reality platform that was training the likes of police, security guards and music industry professionals to practice and learn how to prevent sexual assault more effectively, which is a real gap and something that is still being worked on. And through that, you know, steep learning curve, only person in that cohort, not on the tech side, really, but I know how to do behavioral change. And I was blown away by the results that we got using immersive tech to help people change really deep-seated habits, behaviors, and neural pathways. So I was, you know, in love with that space. And yeah, on the side, not sure I'd recommend it, but alongside McKinsey and UN Women, I set up a wellness and fitness studio in North London. So bootstrap business, still ticking along, profitable 6 years later, never took investment. So different type of business from what I'm running now. But we were able to deliver in-person meditation support to a whole bunch of really kind of mixed community members from across North London. And I just was frustrated by, you know, the incredible results that we saw, but this limited scale. So it was such a treat when Your Haven were assembling their exec team and they reached out and said, look, we're looking for someone who sits at that tiny intersection between wellness, brand partnerships and VR for good. And you happen to be in that little niche. So yeah, feel very lucky to be running Your Haven now. And actually, I'm still doing that structural change. So we are all about, the reality is that we will never close the gap between the need and the availability of mental health support using one-to-one interactions, even if we use tech to link them up. So how can we create super impactful experiences and tools that help to change people's mindsets and happiness at scale? And that's what we're doing at Your Haven.
Wow. I'm actually furiously writing notes because this is super interesting. And I think there's a lot of learnings actually for women of Web3, especially what you're mentioning about actually making real structural change. Because I think I love what we do at Women of Web3 because it is very much a community, but in terms of the real longer term structural impact, it's very much, I don't know, structural change light. But actually, we need all of these things happening. You need the kind of grassroots organisations and communities and policy change. You need all of it in place. And so, Women of Web3 and communities like it have a place within that. But it makes me think, well, I need to sort of stay in touch with you for help with this and driving real change.
I'm such a believer that there are loads of roles in a movement and that you need frontline activists pulling all the opinions in one direction. You need bridge builders working with the corporate sector and regulators to like create that shared understanding. You need, you know, rebels, ideators, creatives, regulators. And so I think there's definitely space for community building in this and women need that. So I think what you're doing is super important, but we'd love to work out how we can do more together.
Yeah. I mean, all of that sounds right up my street. Briefly returning to what you're saying about your work at UN Women. So it sounded like the sexual harassment was a sort of major thing that you're working on making an impact on. When you think about the sort of women in AI or like women's relationship with tech and how this sort of emerging tech will have an impact for women, how do you see that playing out? Or like maybe some, you know, what are you concerned about or excited about? How do you see that playing out?
Well, in the work that I did at UN Women UK and that the amazing team there is still doing, we thought about the structural change that we create for gender equality in three categories, and that is women's safety, choice, and voice. And so that's, you know, physical, mental, emotional safety, freedom from violence as a weapon in conflict, etc. Choice being what, you know, from the toys that kids play with and that are put in their hands at the age of three that shape gender norms to the jobs that we do later in life, what opportunities are available to us? Are we allowed to vote? Can we open a bank account without our dad's permission? And then a voice being representation, you know, in politics, in society, across business, in all of the spaces. And I think often we just think about representation and that voice part when we think about gender equality, especially in terms of like sectoral change. So it's really easy to think, well, once we get more women into this industry or sector, we'll be fine. And you see that in all sorts of different places. And I think there are kind of two concerns that I have. So one is like, we're just starting to see people really realize the safety concerns that emerging technologies can, you know, come with. I won't say create, because actually the way that they're created is about how we interact as humans in any space, not the technologies. But it's just that, you know, emerging spaces with fewer regulatory eyes, you know, fewer kind of co-creation opportunities with the people who are most at threat, like it's going to happen. And we don't want to create like the Wild Wests, right? So I think one is whether it is like sexual assault in metaverse spaces or the collection of data that if you're using a service that might be, you know, tracking your cycles, your periods, depending on the part of the world you live in, is that data being shared without your knowledge with the state at worst? You know, companies also who might be using that for quite nefarious means. And I think there are all sorts of ways, you know, and quite dangerous ways that data collection and retargeting, including through the use of AI, which obviously often replicates algorithmic bias from all of human history, which is incredibly biased. I think there are those sorts of dangers. I also think in terms of this context for the women leading Web3, there are experiences that just shouldn't be happening. And that in when you're fundraising for a business in particular, or you're kind of leading in a space where there's very little representation, I do find that things are allowed to go on, that in bigger corporate sectors where they've been looking at D&I for longer, it may not be solved by any means, but there's definitely more scrutiny. So some examples, you know, I hear this from a lot of women business founders, but it's very frustrating for me to be out trying to explain what I'm doing to change the face of mental health and having investors trying to, you know, take you on a date or proposition you in a sexual way when you're just trying to look for investment and funding. And it makes you feel unsafe going out to these evening networking events trying to raise. I also think that, and it's just something that, you know, for better or worse, male founders are not experiencing and women and marginalized genders are. And that's the tip of the iceberg, right? So that kind of then links into whether you're taken seriously. We know that less than 2% of VC funding is going to women founders. Like, it's a huge issue. And I think even if you're in a kind of corporate role in this space, we assume that representation is king and will naturally bring change with it. But if that trickle of increased representation happens slowly enough, we assimilate to the existing system and we don't see change. So just having more women leaders in general, like A, you've all got the same 10 female angel investors or women on boards, but, you know, it's just, it's the same very few women in this space appearing everywhere. But B, that change in itself will not change the system. And so I think it's working out how to do both at the same time.
This is super interesting. Thank you. And it does feel like there is a lack of diversity and inclusion, a lack of attention to that in the sort of Web3 space. It feels like bigger corporates and business more broadly has been, I don't know, getting on board with it better. A lot of that has been representation, as you say. Even something like this podcast is a good, is an example of kind of, yeah, spotlighting women to sort of better represent, like, hey, there are plenty of opportunities for women to be in this space and to lead in this space. But yeah, as you were saying, just having more women, it isn't really enough. And yeah, when you start also looking at marginalized genders, I feel like I've been having more and more conversations with people about how we define women of Web3, because I very much see it as open to, like, to all genders, but I want it to feel welcoming to marginalized genders as well as people that would identify as women. So it does feel like this stuff needs to be taken more seriously. And so I suppose I really admire the work that you've been doing in all of this.
A few months ago, I actually went to a friend, the brilliant Sophie Neary of Meta and now Google fame, who does amazing work to lift women up in business, had taken me on a table of incredible women to an event where the speaker was a Web3 expert and was talking about crypto, among other things. And I asked some questions that I posed in a very supportive and non-critical way, saying, look, I think we're all super excited about this, but I was just probing a little bit into timing on things like the risk of crypto investing, given the comparative lack of regulation for young people, women, Black people and marginalized ethnicities, which I think is a valid question, and also some things about the carbon footprint. I was by far the youngest person in the room, by the way, which I try not to bring into anything, but it is massively magnified when somebody, you ask a question like that and the speaker goes, I think you're confused. And I wasn't confused. And a lot of other people in the room were. And it was, you know, he really then spent a couple of minutes kind of taking me down from quite a personal perspective. I was also one of the very few women in the room, which when everyone's in black tie is very obvious. And at the end, the compere said, yeah, so we've had some great questions. People over here wanting to get their own NFTs. Someone over here just not quite understanding the field. And I was like, this behavior is super damaging and it's happening in big rooms full of people who could put their hand up and say, this is exactly what's holding women back in Web3. So I'm just glad you're creating spaces like this to stop that.
That's really worrying. And also, I'm just sorry that was so patronizing for you. It's rubbish. Okay, well, I really want to chat about Your Haven because I feel like I want to sort of, well, spotlight it, hero it, everything you're working on, because in my limited understanding of what you told me, because we share the same co-working space, what you told me about it sounds really cool. So it's, you're marrying up mental health and immersive spaces like virtual reality, or as we were saying the other day, like, you know, AR, VR, XR, all the R's. So yeah, tell me about, what is Your Haven? What are your kind of products or services? How does it all work?
I would love to. Thank you. So I mean, look, the problem that we kind of landed on here, which is something I'm very passionate about, is more than 70% of us are chronically stressed, and one in four people worldwide has a diagnosable mental health condition. So, you know, that one in four doesn't include all the people who are just a bit burned out and running themselves into the ground, right, who can also do with support. And with the number of practitioners we have in the world, which in some countries is 5 for every 100,000 people in the population, what that means is, you know, a practitioner would typically have a caseload of like 20 people, maybe 30 clients. And if you use tech, you could maybe push that up to like 40 in their average week or couple of weeks. They would need to have a caseload of more than 3,000 people just to treat the diagnosable people. So, you know, yeah, you can build a tech solution where you can see your therapist's avatar, but it does not get to the heart of that issue. So what we've created at Your Haven is an immersive platform where a practitioner, you know, so this is like a CBT therapist, a peak performance coach, a breathwork instructor, right? It's kind of non-Western as well as Western knowledge. But they just need to upload a sample of their voice and the written structure of their session. And the Your Haven engine generates immersive experiences for them. So that could be from anxiety to ADHD, peak performance to PTSD, you know, a whole range of different needs and conditions. And that gives you visual and really interactive, immersive breathing aids, you know, elements that can help you manage your pain or visualize or think about your body image differently. And that is really important because it is so much more effective than e-learning or, you know, online courses. They just can't compete in terms of the behavioral and the mental change that we see. So, yeah, it's those sessions are also personalized. They're available in almost any language because of the way that we've built that engine. So we save, you know, 95% of content recording costs and time because they're not recorded sessions. They're AI generated, but our GPT learns from that expert's work and it is their voice. So the effect is that you get to see, you know, your favorite coach or guru on Masterclass or your favorite therapist in the NHS, but unlimited sessions for $5.99 a month.
Wow. When you say it's their voice, are you having a sort of back and forth conversation with them, or is it more like a sort of more like an immersive version of a YouTube video?
At the moment, the thing I would compare it to most closely is a CBT session. So CBT was created by the NHS after the Second World War because they couldn't fulfill the capacity that people needed for psychotherapy for all the trauma that had been created as a result of that. So it's already quite formulaic in a sense, and that's part of the point. The sessions that we offer in our consumer-facing product and platform at the moment, which has just gone live on Meta App Labs, so please give it a try and tell me what you think. So that could, you know, our first kind of version of that consumer product, it's quite formulaic. It's not a free-flowing conversation as much as you give it inputs, you pick things that you need and your moods, and the sessions will be personalized based on that and different every time you do them. What we have built at the heart of it and what we're offering on the B2B side is a much more interactive and ultimately will be self-service platform. So we're moving towards eventually a TEDx kind of model where we'll have our content that is the Your Haven core content with our guides, but that actually there'll also be a community area where anyone can create their own sessions for, you know, learning, knowledge sharing, therapy.
Interesting. So you might have something like, I don't know, 10 different therapists, anybody be able to sort of pay to go and access their content. And actually, presumably that would mean that you could sort of dip in and out and find someone that best suits you and you know, how you like to be spoken to or how you like to be helped.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, because, you know, it's a kind of weird mindset shift for people in the field at first to think about using generative AI to power this, because it's like, well, what does that mean for my work and my voice? You know, we make sure that all of that is protected. But yeah, it is a mental leap. And it's based on the fact that we will never solve the mental health crisis if we rely on the time of those people. We just don't have time to train enough people before we lose the battle. So yeah, you know, we know that it's an emerging field and it can feel odd, but if you really find a guide whose voice you love, and that could be all sorts of different reasons. I at one point had an ex who was American, and so I prefer British voices now. So you might have all sorts of personal reasons to pick a particular guide. But if you do find a voice that you like, you can tap into knowledge from other guides with that person's voice. So it's also interchangeable.
Oh, wow. I think for a while I'd already been thinking that AI makes a lot of sense for something like therapy, partly because years ago I used to did some PR on a product called Sleepio, which is like digital CBT for sleep. And I'd been thinking when I started learning about ChatGPT, I was like, this is exactly the sort of thing that would make sense to have a sort of AI version of this, is that it's a bit more like, rather than having a completely set structure, that it could be a little bit more personalized. You can maybe have back and forth. And as you say, that it can reach so many more people than there are practitioners to deliver this stuff. So do you need to have a headset of some kind, like whether it's sort of like Meta Quest or an Apple Vision Pro? Do you need to have one of those in order to access this? Would you call it therapy or like product or?
Yeah, platform. Yeah, platform app. At the moment, yes, you do. Mm. You know, of course, we've had people over the journey so far who've said, well, why don't you just go into a mobile app? And we're like, because Calm and Headspace are doing wonderful work in that area, not AI powered. So, you know, they don't have that kind of element. But the retention for those platforms is very low on mobile. You know, people sitting listening to pre-recorded audio on their phone initially gets a very large number of, you know, a lot of interest, large number of users. Unfortunately, most of those people churn very quickly. And that's because it's not immersive content. So to get the results for B2B and healthcare clients that we're looking at, as well as for the B2C space, you know, the immersive tech is a really important part of that. We are looking at, look, while that market grows, you know, we know the consumer headset market won't be there for another 5 years. In that time, how do we broker the right partnerships to get our product and the technology into your local library, pharmacy, you know, luxury fitness club, local kind of youth center, all of those locations. So we hope that you'll be able to access a headset kind of on your local high street sooner than you might buy one if you don't already have one.
I really like that. And I also like that library idea that you might be able to essentially sort of borrow or like, yeah, check out a headset and something that can really help you with it, rather than, I think people think of any kind of VR or XR, whatever headset, as basically for play only. But I think we've known for a few years that VR can be really beneficial when it comes to mental health. Are there studies that you have either seen or in whatever way lean on in your work, or sort of like driven you to be building something like Your Haven?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. I could talk about this in a whole session on its own, but there is incredible research that is coming out from across the world on use cases from diagnostic and treatment in Parkinson's, pain relief for people going through chemotherapy, empathy building, body image. Of course, phobias. You know, I'm sure a lot of the listeners will have seen the piloting across the NHS around treating things like agoraphobia with Oxford VR and others. But there are a number of different NHS pilot testings going out now. There are things for loneliness, autism, ADHD, you know, incredible range of proof points of how immersive technology can help. And I think to your point before, you know, we just need to make sure that this is built in responsible ways by experts. So that's why we don't create the content ourselves at Your Haven. And also why I think if you're looking for CBT support, like, of course, there are risks inherent with using the public ChatGPT platform to just kind of churn out any advice. But if you can train models from experts and their work, and then they define the session structure, and we have kind of limited sections that change based on their other work, we're putting in place a number of kind of safeguarding things to make sure that it's evidence-based and it's safe. But yeah, I think, you know, from mental health to also there are physical applications as well. So some of the biggest costs to the NHS and other national health care services are conditions like diabetes and COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder. So that is, you know, people who have lung issues, essentially, which is making me want to cough now I say that. And actually, at-home therapy is going to be an important part of both of those, the management of both of those conditions with a rapidly aging population. And that's the sort of thing that immersive technology is super powerful for. And yes, a lot of people are very wary because they tried a roller coaster ride on a Quest in 2019 and it made them feel ill. But, you know, it is not the case that all immersive tech makes people feel nauseous, and we can get around a lot of those kind of concerns and trepidations and access issues if we do it in the right way.
How are you getting on with your Apple Vision Pro? Thank you for letting me try it out the other day, your sort of your newborn baby in the office, your headset.
Yes. I wish I had birthed it myself. not in a physical sense, but, you know, that'd be nice. No, we are getting on well with it. It's really, really interesting to your point about people thinking that these pieces of hardware are about play. Play is really important to me, by the way. It was my word for 2023. I think we should integrate more play into every area of our lives. But yeah, there are huge use cases of this beyond gaming. And I actually think there are very large numbers of gamers who seek what you might describe as meditative experiences, but aren't fully consciously doing that. So there are a host of amazing apps, you know, from real VR fishing to Tetris Effect to puzzling places where people are having meditative experiences. And I'm like, imagine if we can tap into that with trained professionals and give them really beautiful guided sessions. But also on the Vision Pro, you know, most of these early adopters are more like productivity buffs who are integrating that into their daily working lives. And so it's really not a kind of gaming first piece of hardware. And I think that is very interesting for us at Your Haven, because it opens up, you know, possibilities of really being able to get a glimpse into how this will fit into people's daily lives. You know, currently, we don't rely on $100 PT sessions only to keep us fit, right? We know that we can keep fit without face-to-face guidance from a trainer, and we have the tools increasingly to do that. In the mental fitness space, we don't really have that. So we go and sit on a waiting list for 6 months or pay a lot of money to see a private therapist. And that's hugely valuable, but it's also not very accessible. And so I think products like the Vision Pro, like, of course, until the lower cost SE version of that comes out, hardly anyone will have them. You know, it's a super high cost item for most people right now. And we have one because we're developers. And so, you know, we're building for that space to be one of the first movers. But I think once the market really opens up and other producers are already starting to respond to this, we'll be in a position where we can see how this can fit more easily into our daily lives, but also generate community experiences. And I think we're a little all scared about loneliness, quite understandably at the moment, using this piece of kit. But, you know, platforms like Your Haven are working really hard to get to community, co-creation, self-transcendental experiences using the piece of hardware. And I think we'll get there quicker than we think.
If somebody hasn't experienced using like a VR headset or XR, so, you know, or, you know, something like a Meta Quest or an Apple Vision Pro, and maybe they either can't afford to get one yet or maybe don't have enough interest to go and, like, you know, fully spend the money on buying a headset, do you think there's somewhere people can try stuff out, or like resources and things you'd point them towards, or like just to kind of know a bit more? Because people, it's one of those things where it's either a kind of zero or everything. Like, you either don't have a headset at all or you're using it a lot.
Well, I guess I'll say it on three levels. A, if you are a student or researcher in this space and you don't have one, an increasing amazing network of universities have departments that have them. And so if you're thinking about becoming a researcher in this space, or you really want to kind of look into that, I would definitely contact your local university's academic department. B, it's part of my vision for Your Haven that for more democratized public use, we will have them in the high street very soon. So I really hope that sooner rather than later, we'll be able to have at least people in the UK and hopefully further afield being able to go and book a slot to get some mental health support themselves. And C, I'm going to use this as a shameless self-promotion opportunity, which is that at Your Haven, we do meetups and parties for people who are interested in this space and are, you know, building something themselves or just interested to learn more. So we would love you, if you're not on the Your Haven mailing list already, just drop me a line on LinkedIn or whatever your favorite platform is. And we have both we have a Quest 2, a Quest 3 and a Vision Pro option for you to come and decide kind of what is your preferred channel for this technology, and would love to hear your thoughts. So, you know, please do get in touch if you want to come and use ours.
Amazing. I think, yeah, people will take you up on that offer. This has been really, really interesting, and especially everything you've told me about the stuff that you've worked on and the real impact it can have, like partly the impact that the issues have and partly by working at that sort of higher level of making true structural change, is really inspiring. So so lastly, Claire, where can people find you online?
LinkedIn is my best one. So if you look up Claire Barnett, like the place but with two T's, you'll find me. I also am on Instagram at claire.d.b, if that's your preferred thing. And I'm not on X or TikTok or anything cool like that at the moment, but Your Haven is. So if you look up Your Haven Official, Your Haven App, or just Your Haven across those platforms, you'll find us and join the community. It's a great bunch of people.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Lovely to meet you.
Thanks for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. I've been your host, Lauren Ingram. Please do give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps more women, more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to come and join our talent collective and get your profile seen by potential Web3 employers, or you can choose to be anonymous if you prefer. If you're at a company that's looking to understand Web3 better, or you want to support women in this space, do get in touch with us on our website. And if you've got any questions, any comments, tweet us at womenofweb3co or find us on LinkedIn, and we'll see you next Tuesday morning.